joining us for another intriguing edition of the Stack Pack. Perhaps you could help solve a mystery. I mean, perhaps and help one word. I swear, I just have one sip of whiskey, and I made up a word. Perhaps. Stack Pack. I'm David, and joined by Dan. And socially distanced from Staten Island is our friend Dan Derwin again. What's up, dude?
How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Just watching a lot of TV. Man, we got super into 60 Days In. Have you ever seen this, 60 Days In?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Oh, what is it?
Oh, my goodness.
It's been on for like 6 fucking years, man. And it's
a TV show where they take anywhere between 7 and 9 ordinary people and throw them into a county jail for 60 days. And their objective is to kind of just observe and assimilate.
They're supposed to help the jail and tell people what's wrong with it, but you know what it is. It's fucking garbage television. And it's
absolutely.
And it's just, so these normal people are undercover in jail, and they make it seem like they're doing a documentary about the whole jail, so they can kind of like take them out and be like, hey, how's it going, fucking house mother of 5? And she's like, oh god, I almost got stabbed. And it's fucking wild.
Can you believe the ketchup's not organic?
Is it anything like that show Jail? It's like the offshoot of Cops. You ever see it?
No.
It's actually called Jail, and they don't even show any of the arresting portion of, you know, the crime, and they just show them get pushed into this facility, and they start spitting on the guards, and they put a cone on their head and strap them to a chair. And it's
damn.
So it's like just cool. Them, like, once they get to prison and they're like in like the little holding cell and they're like screaming, and then they strap them to a chair, and then
it's like Cops is part one and then Jail is the sequel.
This is fucking
interesting.
This show, it's like addictive, but you know it's like shit. You know, and it's like I'm learning a lot about the ins and outs of the jail prison system, but it's still it's
learning the market. I'm confident that
you could trade commissary for a bunk bed or whatever the fuck they do.
I'm confident that if I was to go to jail right now.
Trade commissary for a blowjob, which is
soups.
I'm sure that happens a lot.
Which is what they call a lot of the guys in here are straight, but they're gay for their stay, you know, gay for stay.
How many soups do you think a blowjob costs?
Soups? Yeah, like ramen? Yeah, they like the ramen.
That's currency on the outside.
Dude, it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, now it is, right? Yeah, there's a lot of things that are matching up. They smoke these e-cigarettes that look like they're made of, like, paper. Like, they look like they're fucking, like, pencils. I guess it's, like, a harmless, like...
They're using what they can.
They can't make a shank, so they're, like, these, like, disposable e-cigarettes. I don't know what they are, but it's weird.
It's crazy how much we think we know about jail. After all these TV shows that are on and documentaries, everyone probably thinks that they know exactly what jail is like for like the last 30, 40 years of, you know, behind the scenes programming. And
it's not what I thought. All this time I thought it was just a bunch of people in black and white striped outfits, ball and chain, you know, working on the side of the highway. But no.
And then every now and then Johnny Cash would show up and do a concert.
Shawshank Redemption style guards.
Yeah. Or
everyone
Green
twirling
Mile.
Twirling a nightstick. Yeah,
there's a magical guy that's on death row who brings mice back to life.
Rita Hayworth posted.
What's some other weird quarantine thing? Oh, I watched this crazy movie called Vivarium. That was about this couple that like goes to see a house and they get stuck in this like labyrinth that's just like a never-ending like neighborhood where all the fucking like houses look the same. Mm-hmm. It was a complete mind fuck. A baby shows up and they're like, "Raise the baby and you'll escape."
And it sounds like a video game premise,
dude.
Raise this baby, level like, 2.
From what I could, I think it's like aliens, and they were just thinking, "Oh, this is what humans do." And it seemed like it was just like a fucked up allegory for being a parent, you know? It was pretty fucking cool, but it was it hurt my mind. Hurt after.
We've been watching 6 Feet Under. The HBO show, old show.
I've never seen that, but I'm tempted because I've heard.
I think we probably talked about this last time, but it's excellent. I've seen it a couple times, but we're going into the final season. It's a must watch if anybody out there has not heard it yet.
Last time, saw it yet. I know that Dexter plays a gay dude and they all run a funeral home, right?
Yeah, it's a family that runs a funeral home. And that's actually like where I saw him first, before Dexter.
It was before Dexter.
That was his first role, you know, a major role at least. But it's excellent. Highly recommended.
And what's it about? Like, do they kill people or are they just deal with dead people?
They kill people to blow up their own business. It's a family run funeral home, and just the shit that happens, you know, between the two brothers, the sister, the parents, you know. I'm sure that's not what you would put on the back of the box to promote it. Very vague, but it's a good show.
So there's no like murder or like
boobs? There's some stuff, but it has.
There's no murder or boobs.
Oh, there's both.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Those boxes are checked sometime in the show.
Exactly. At some point, you will be satisfied with a murder or a drug passing or.
Have you fucks with any of these Apple TV shows?
No, I don't have Apple TV. Anything worthwhile?
There's like this really cool M. Night Shyamalan show called Servant, and that one's really weird. It's the kind of Rosemary's Baby style, like. It's like 6 half-hour episodes. It's like 10 half-hour episodes, so it's like a quick watch. It's pretty cool. And there's this other show called Hold the Truth with Octavia Spencer, where she plays like a true crime podcaster. And she's trying to get Aaron Paul off death row because he's like, he was convicted of killing somebody when he was a teenager. It's pretty interesting. There's also a comedy with the dude from Always Sunny where they run like a World of Warcraft style like MMORPG.
Or Charlie?
Mac.
Okay.
Yeah. Mac and Charlie created it, but Mac's the star of it, and it's like he's like the boss of like this gaming team. It's pretty good.
I got to check it out. I mean, I'm still not even on Hulu yet, so I guess one step at a time.
and there's this other really good true crime show that just started called Defending Jacob, where Captain America plays a DA of a tiny town, and his son is accused of murdering another teenage boy, and it's pretty fucking pretty good.
That's awesome. Yeah, we just watched Outsider, a little late to the party, but we just watched Outsider.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh,
man, King, yeah. Good.
Yeah, Outsider is cool.
I was trying to hold off and read the book first, but between the quarantine and looking for shit to do, that we just dove into the show, and yeah, it was very good.
It's pretty good. It's pretty close to the book. I would say it's even more. It even has more than the book. It's like a little because it filled 10 hours. The book's pretty big, but they added some more fun investigation and definitely made Holly a different character.
The book is I bought it. I haven't read it.
It's pretty big.
It's like 500, mid 500s. Yeah. Which one did you like better? I know you're a big King fan.
I don't know. I think the show was pretty awesome. It was like a little more human. I like the version of Holly Gibney, the private investigator.
Yeah.
She kind of had like a supernatural kind of instinct. In the book, she's just kind of OCD and just good at her job. But in this, they like implied that she, you know, was like insanely smart or something. It was pretty cool.
I really like Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah, he was good.
Everything that he's been in lately has been pretty good. He was great in Rogue One. He was good in that kind of shitty show on Netflix, Bloodline.
Oh,
he was
okay in that. I've never saw that.
The show ended up being okay, but he was really good.
Yeah, he had a cool arc because he was so like, I mean, just how that show begins, like they arrest that dude in the middle of
spoilers
of his game or whatever, but he really does have a cool character arc from like full skeptic to like maybe things that we can't explain, which is
that was a great pilot just to introduce how he operates.
Yeah, it's a good show. Outsider and HBO. Yeah,
go watch it.
All right, let's talk about some murder. Actually, yeah, this first case is a pretty screwed up little
Swedish house mafia, right?
Yeah, these poor Swedish tourists that were murdered hitchhiking in the 80s. Kind of a shitty way to go. And their names were Mary and Maria. Mary Lillenberg and Maria Birgitta Wallen.
Is that how she pronounces it?
That's how she pronounces it, yep.
Okay.
I double checked.
just making sure.
So, wow, they were super young. 23-year-old Mary and 25-year-old Maria. They were two Swedish maids. Swedish housemaids. Did they work at a hotel?
I don't think they were housemaids first. They ended up working as housemaids. Like, so, like, is that what you put on their resume? How does that work?
I think it said that they were housekeepers at, like, a ski resort in Colorado. And at the end of their contract, they decided to, you know, see the coast before they flew back to Sweden.
Yeah, yes. They don't explain too much of the background. I'm assuming they just, like, they'd been in America for a while.
So I'm guessing...
Because they were working to live. So, yeah. And it says that they met there. They were maids. There.
Yeah.
It says that they met there, too. Like, so they weren't... They just happened to both be Swedish. Oh, they met in the States. Yeah. I mean, that's what it implies.
Within 20 seconds of, like, the case starting, like, the dad was already getting off the plane in California. Like, they didn't really... Like you said, they didn't really give a backstory. Kind of, like, just, like, showed up. Like, the dad showed up, and he was concerned for his kids or his daughter. And then, you know, both dads were there.
Well, it was Marie's fifth season at the chateau.
Really?
He's just improvising.
Oh, my God. Jesus. I fucking fell for that hook, line, and sinker.
He moved up from just a bus, you know, dishwasher.
She was originally a chambermaid.
To housekeeping. Yeah, and then she goes into whatever. So she's dead. Okay, sorry. No. There's more before that. Yeah, so they were maids in Valley, Colorado at some, like, ski resort, 1983 of the summer. And then they were like, let's go to California before we head back home. Like, we, you know, like, they briefly say, we're just making shit up in between. So they were going across California, hitching from one place to another with creepy 1980s motorists on the highway. And everybody had warned them, nah, don't fucking do that.
Bad idea.
They got warned by people in their own country, and people in the States warned them both about hitchhiking.
They felt like they had good judgment.
Yeah, they thought that they could just judge somebody.
They could figure it
character
out.
With their, yeah. And they could
see, two of us versus one of them.
We got it. I'm surprised that wasn't Southern.
Yeah. I am from Texas. Oh, shit. No, now you're doing a Southern person, and you're doing the Swedish thing. yeah, so they thought they could defend themselves, too, because they were both very small Swedish women. So they were able to talk to, like, a couple different truck drivers, and one actually talks about how he kind of lectured them the whole way, like, this ain't Sweden, you know. This
Is that the guy that looked like Farva from Super Troopers?
Yeah, he looked pretty clean cut, huh, for a trucker. He looked pretty normal.
Him and the investigator looked the same.
Yeah, I got confused.
One had, like, gray hair, one had brown hair, but it was the same face. I was like, oh, it's Farva.
So this dude was, Mark Hansen was the truck driver that we're talking about. And he drove the girls from San Diego to Compton. And when they were there, he actually had another truck driver friend drive them to Oakland, and he agreed. And then from Oakland, they went to San Francisco, which is just right across the bridge. The last time these women were seen alive was hitchhiking near Redwood City. And apparently they were trying to get back to L.A. because they had a flight July 24th back to Sweden.
Yeah.
2 days later, their backpacks, passports, and other items are found in a dumpster.
Dumpster
diver.
In
the city of Commerce, California, which is, you know, something's up. And Commerce is right outside of L.A., so they got close to their destination but didn't quite make it, it seems.
No dice.
They also found a travel diary and, like, a camera with some undeveloped photos. And it's creepy. They show these photos, like, of these girls on their last vacation before they were murdered.
The poolside. Yeah.
Eerie.
I mean, those girls suffered from the classic 80s. You know, they were 23 in 1984, but they looked like they were 38.
Yeah, it's a rough.
Like, Keith Hernandez played for the Mets in, like, 86, and, like, he was, you know, 29 years old, but he always looks like my dad, even now.
He looks like everybody's, yeah, everybody's uncle.
Yeah, no one's that young, ever.
It's funny, Alon and I were tripping out about this coach that we had in elementary school because his, like, niece goes to the same school, and he's still there. And I was like, dude, that guy was like 40 back then. And we were like, probably not, though. We were just like,
no, eight. I can't get any of those ages back you know, correct from back in the day. Everyone looked older, and they're like, "Oh, I was only 22."
In reality, Coach is actually pushing 80.
Yeah, or maybe he could be really old too. I mean, it was anyway. Yeah. So all their shit's found in Commerce City, abandoned. The pictures show them, like, you know, swimming and hanging out outside of different hotels. And after they vanish, in comes both of their fathers to the U.S. And we see one of them, like, having a little press conference trying to get some information about what happened to their kids. So a month later, on August 18th, two deer hunters find their bodies. They're both decomposing. It was in Los Padres National Forest near Santa Barbara. They've both been raped and stabbed to death. The dental records and jewelry were what confirmed their identities.
Isn't that always the Unsolved Mysteries way? It's always two people where they don't belong. You know, it always, like, they'll have a body in the woods, well hidden, and Robert Stack is like, two boys who are out muskrat hunting came across, and you're like, what the fuck were they doing there? Like, that should have been a great dump spot. But it's always two people where they shouldn't be finding these bodies. I just don't get it. Where
two
are you?
Deer hunters.
I'll never find anything out there because I don't go in the woods.
Yeah. That'll never be us.
There's always a guy walking the train track by himself kicking rocks. Like, he's the one that finds, like, five bodies. Like, that doesn't happen. Get out of there.
Or every so often, treasure.
Well, the thing is, if you hear about a body, then you have, like, a fun Stand By Me, like, adventure with your best buds, and it, like, changes you forever.
Do you, though?
When you go to find a dead body by the train tracks.
Yeah, where are those kids that found those two girls now? Like, are they, remember that night? You know, do they still talk about it?
Oh, fuck yeah, I'm sure they do.
They're probably dead, too.
We all know what happened to Gordy LaChance. Yeah, so cops didn't know. They had nothing. They had no idea, no leads, until 8 years later when a creepy call, somebody called the Swedish consulate claiming that a woman-hater named Lauren was responsible for the murders.
He had a very sultry voice, that
he
guy.
He did, yeah. What did he say? What was the first line he said?
He's like, they were wearing tank tops and shorts. So it's like something very, very perverted.
He's like, yes.
He sounded very aroused.
There was a weird inflection to, like, how he was talking to the lady, and I can't remember it at all.
It sounded like a 900 sex phone call.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the generic
woman hater named Lauren
photograph in the background of the girl at the consulate?
Was she eating, like, a pizza, or she had a crown on? It was one.
It's a crown of flowers.
It's like the most, it's the thing you think of when you think of Sweden, which is like a little girl in a white dress with a crown of flowers. Is that just me?
That's definitely hanging in IKEA.
I have an odd feeling, like, there's also, like, flower petals, like, on her right shoulder. But if I'm looking at it correctly, the flowers around her head are actually, like, real or, like, fake, like, plastic flowers glued on.
Oh, like they had them on the frame, or it was, like, in the picture?
I think it's, like, glued onto the picture.
It's like a 3D. Terrible. It's called 3D art, and art's subjective. You know, it's a different time. I have no idea. But
it was a very generic Swedish consulate, for sure, for the reenactment.
Yeah, they just got, like, a picture of something very Swedish and put it behind a lady. Is there a flag? I don't even think there's a flag there, is there?
There is a flag.
Okay, they got a flag. They got a flag.
Gary and Scenic had approximately 45 minutes to make that shot happen.
They got a flag. so the results are no one ever found who killed these people.
Yeah, that case kind of ended suddenly on TV. Like, they didn't really say if you have any information. There were no sketches. There were no, like, final thoughts. It just faded black and went to case number two.
Damn. Have you read what's on the wiki?
No. What's on?
Ooh. I'm excited.
Can we talk about, like, how healthy these truck drivers were and how friendly they are? Like, I know a lot of professional truck drivers.
Like,
and,
a lot of these truck drivers had daughters, so they were treating them very, you know, fatherly. And then
got me on another truck episode.
That's funny. And then the guy was like, I was talking to him more like a brother, you know, telling him that this ain't Sweden. And even the investigator is like, he says, like, Sweden is completely, fully, 100% middle class, and everybody's fucking nice. They're not used to that shit.
Sweden's great.
Yeah. every motherfucker is perfectly in the middle. On September 26th of 91, there was an anonymous caller that contacted the Swedish consulate named,
Sultry Man.
The Sultry Man. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So this is just a little bit more, info about the Sultry Man. The Sultry Man claimed that another man, the Sultry Man is the man calling because he has a sultry voice.
Yes.
And he claims that there's a man named Lauren that was responsible for the murders, like we said. He also says that Lauren was from Canada and he apparently hated women.
Jesus.
He also drove from Canada to Mexico during the summer in a white van with the green canoe on top. Lauren apparently told the caller that he had come through San Diego and he had met two Swedish women who had tried to con him. You remember this?
Oh. Con.
According to the caller, he confessed to killing both women. He was over 6 feet, slight build, 175 pounds, and a protruding nose and red hair.
Oh, is that the guy with the watery eyes?
It's Conan O'Brien. What? Okay, no, that's too short.
The guy with the guy in the reactment, he had the watery eyes. Did you see that guy with the, he had a pointed nose and watery eyes and like sandy hair.
Oh. It was
like, and he's like, please put your luggage in the back.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
That guy.
We all know that the killer is Ron Howard. Think about it. He still would have had some hair at this time. I'm just saying.
He's got like the horseshoe bald.
A perfect horseshoe.
Yes.
Yeah. So this guy, Lauren, was like a creepy, anti-woman incel. But he said that the girls tried to con him and that's why he killed them. But there's nothing else on this, I guess, right?
That's it, yeah.
There's no update?
Rest in peace.
Update, no.
Well, actually, apparently this anonymous caller actually helped the cops find this Lauren person. But there was never enough evidence to convict this person of any crimes.
Yeah, no way.
Lauren was later arrested and convicted in other crimes, but has never been charged with the murders.
Ooh, what other crimes?
Lauren is believed to be Lauren Joseph Herzog. We should look that up. He and Wesley Shermanite were dubbed the Speed Freak Killers.
Shermanite?
Shermantine. Sorry.
Oh, sounds like a detergent.
Shermanite. Sounds like a weird type of Mormon.
M. Night Shermanite.
M. Night Shermanite. Shermantine. Okay.
Jesus.
So Lauren was believed to be Lauren Joseph Herzog, and him and Wesley Shermantine were known as the Speed Freak Killers. I've actually heard of the Speed Freak Killers.
Wow.
Why were they called
not.
The Speed Freaks?
I think they were freaks about doing speed.
Oh.
Herzog died on he killed himself on January of 2012.
Guilty.
I guess he was in prison. I don't know. And Shermantine is currently in death row. The duo is suspected of murdering at least 15 people, including possibly Michaela Garrett. Garrett? I don't know. I think that might be another unsolved case.
It's an unsolved mystery how to pronounce Garrett.
Garrett. Garrett.
Garrett.
Garrett. It's G-A-R-E-C-H-T. Garrett.
No, thank you.
Garrett. You try.
Garrett.
You do
okay.
it.
Okay.
Gert.
So they think that this person that killed him was one of the Speed Freak Killers. That's interesting. And this piece of shit killed himself when he was in jail, because he was in jail at the time.
Fuck him.
Well, actually, who knows if he... I mean, I guess if he is one of the Speed Freak Killers, he's probably in jail. I don't know. I kind of want to know more about that case now.
Bring me back on for the Garrett case, please.
I'd like to know more about Garrett.
Yes.
Etched. Okay, next let's talk about fucking Amelia Earhart, I guess. We talked about Amelia Earhart so damn much. What's this pencil mustache motherfucker's name?
Is that what the guy with the sleepy eyes?
Yeah, the blonde fellow.
The page from 30 Rock?
Page.
No, he looks like a Mike O'Brien character.
I just loved in this like quick Amelia Earhart segment that Robert Stack used the term marooned. They were marooned on the island.
I think it's funny that this is just a segment of throwing shade at this blonde dude because it's pretty much the whole thing is saying that all the shit he found is bogus.
It was a not Gillibrand. It was something like it was Gillespie.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I don't even know where to begin because there's so many Amelia Earhart
documentaries
on segments on Unsolved Mysteries. But yeah, so basically this guy went to the island of Ikimaruro.
Yes.
And it was really close. It was like 20 miles away from the island that she was supposed to land at. And they think that they might have mistaken it for this island. And he found like a bunch of things, like a sole of a shoe and a piece of what he thought was her plane.
The plane, like a piece of metal.
Or something. It's a very specific type of plane. So they got an expert and he made a little copy of this piece and they couldn't match it to the plane. And the guys, and you know, the dude's argument was that she got repairs, you know, when she first tried, but there's logs of all of her repairs and nothing would have been, changed from like the original schematics because it's a fucking airplane, you know, it's not just like, oh, just fucking it was patch
all
it up.
It was all maintained by... Lockheed?
Yeah. So they have every repair that's ever happened.
They kept going back and forth between those guys. Like, they would show one crew, like, oh, they claim this, and then the other crew claimed that. But they would always just show the recreation. Like, the guys would just, like, hold up the piece of metal to the plane, and their heads would just go...
Nope.
Does not match. And then they show the other guy, and he's holding up something else, and he'd go... Like, we get it. It doesn't match up.
Vigorously, you know, shaking his head like they're in a silent movie.
Don't spoon feed it to me.
He's like, don't act too hard. Robert Stack's bitch ass is probably going to talk over us anyway. That's their words, not his. Ours.
Exactly. And then he went through that whole press conference, and at the end, it wasn't solved anyway. So whoever really thought that the Amelia Earhart like thing was ever solved, you know, if you asked me this last week, is it solved? I'd be like, I don't think so. And that's the truth.
Yeah, this guy didn't. He had his little press conference, and then he was just like berated by talking heads saying that everything he found was bullshit.
Exactly.
I do like all the stories. I think my favorite thing from the Amelia Earhart stories is like people's like shortwave radios and like longwave radios, if that's a thing, picking up what was probably her distress calls. Like people, like kids in Florida, they were just like picking up. This is Amelia Earhart.
Oh, like accidentally picking them up. Yeah, it's incredible.
That's freaky. That's spooky.
Or you central. Think about like how she went down, and it was just like bad. It was just a bad radio signal. She was on the wrong channel, and she wasn't. What was it? It was something like she wasn't used to flying on that. Using that frequency, I think it was. But it was something stupid that was the whole reason that she. Didn't make it.
Well, yeah, apparently she was like really notoriously bad at using a radio.
Yeah, that was it. Like she's a great, you know, she was a great pilot, but she was just bad at like one little thing and it cost her the whole fucking trip.
Like one sailor was just like, we heard her distress call, but we could never call back to her because she would never unkey her radio.
She would never unkey the, yes, that was it. She wouldn't
unkey the radio. And then when she unkeyed her radio, she immediately like, turned off her radio to conserve battery. It was just like...
That was it. That was exactly what I was thinking about.
It's like, damn, like, I get it, you're trying to conserve, but, like, give them a second to respond.
Damn.
Damn 1940s radios.
Gotta keep it keyed. I don't know what any of that means, but cool. Yeah, cool, so shit. She's still dead.
Currently dead.
Should have had T-Mobile.
Not alive. Boost Mobile.
Should have had Boost Mobile. Said nobody. All right, yeah. We can move on. Our next case is a fucking depressing-ass lost loves. This dude who was, like, one of these fucking stolen-ass orphans.
Adopted.
This guy, Joe Soul, is looking for his family. In 44, Joe Soul was in kindergarten, and all these pieces of shit children were like, yeah, adopted. That's... They really did this reenactment with like 4 and 5 year olds, and it was so awkward.
I wanted to punch all of them. They were all mean.
All in their little like 1940s garb clothing. So yeah, they fuck. So Gilsoul didn't. So he was like a little 5-year-old. He didn't know he was adopted until these pieces of shit children made fun of him. So he went home and his mom explained. He didn't know what the fuck it meant. What a prick parent, right? Who's like, hey, that kid, you know, he's fucking adopted. You should make fun of him. Even let me tell you what it is. Why? Yeah,
it's the kid's fault.
So you're saying his parents should have told him from like day one, like, hey, we love you and all, but just never forget
you were adopted.
Yeah.
Soak it in.
For real. Yeah, for real.
Hey, Jimmy, we love you, but remember,
but
you're adopted.
My little cousin has known she's adopted. She's like 7 now, but they always told her she was adopted. Not like, you're adopted. They've never been mean about it a second, but she's known since she was like a little baby, adopted.
It's like the concept of adoption. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's the secrecy and the burning the old files and not letting, you know, the kid when they reach an age of reason to go discover who their parents were. Like, it's all that shit that makes it all fucked up.
Yeah, that is true. And so, so this guy was told that his parents died in a car accident. So he was adopted when he was an infant in 1939 by Charles and Florence Soll, S-O-L-L. Charles was a successful attorney who passed away in 1960. And 20 years later, Joe figures out that his birth parents did not die in a car accident and that he was, like, straight up stolen.
Adopted. Stolen, most importantly, because...
Like Derwin was saying, he went to these crazy lengths to make sure that he could never find out who his real parents are.
He burned the paperwork or, you know, was buried with it. Some shit like that.
Well, he found it all, so he didn't do that good of a job because after... like, he found out all this shit after his dad died. His adopted dad.
He sucked.
Yeah. And he does say later in the segment that, like, he gets it, you know, he's like, I see all the stuff my parents went through to get me, but, like, it's still, like, not cool.
It sounded like he had a good life, a good upbringing. He lived in Manhattan. Yeah. Can't really complain. But it must suck to not know, you know, when he's talking about later on, he's like, oh, I don't know if I have aunts, uncles, cousins. That sucks.
Can I take a side, like a turn over here? If his cover story was true that his parents did die in an automobile accident, what kind of automobile accident would have that been in like the 1930s?
Oh, definitely like huge wheels on a small car, probably a cliff, no guardrail, big fire. What else happened in the 30s?
Like, I mean, those cars were like huge back then and they didn't go very fast. So it's just like,
had like that obnoxious horn, the like. Not one penny was found in the car.
So he did find out some stuff from his dad's files. He found out that his name was most likely Robert Wilson, and he was born November 3rd of 1939. He also learned that his mom's name was possibly Ruth Haverman,
or Wagon Blast, or something.
He tracked her down and stuff, the place where her address was listed, but the person said that no one had ever lived there by that name. He did learn there was a family named Habersack who lived there, but I don't know, none of this ever really came to anything.
And there was also a home for our unwed mothers.
Yeah, that was in the area that could have been another
thing. Back when those existed.
Right? It's like so fucked up. So he had seen that the dad had been talking and writing letters to this person named Bessie Bernard. And he looked into this lady and she was a big old fucking terrible, like, baby stealing, black market adoption witch, wicked witch. She was arrested for baby selling in 1949.
What a rap sheet. She wasn't the one that, like, in one of those other Lost Love segments where, like, she was, like, in the back of the Rolls Royce with the door open. And she was like, come on, little kid, on the grass. And the kid's, like, crawling towards the car. I think that might have been Georgia Tan. I think that was that one.
Yeah, yeah. That's a different one, but
same breed.
Same baby-stealing witch.
Witchery. With the rattle in the back seat.
Come play with me, little girl.
And we have rock candy.
Jerome, get him.
Jerome.
Grab him. It was the driver with like the big hat.
So apparently his adopted mother, Florence, at that time, after he started finding stuff out, came clean and told Joe that he had been sold to them by Bessie Bernard through this black market baby operation she had going. Joe learns that Bernard had placed several ads in local newspapers in an attempt to find babies to sell. That's crazy.
That sounds awful.
Classified. Wanted.
Look. One male. 83. Hmm.
$2,000 a baby. That's a big chunk of change back then.
Look here, Charles. $2,000.
He had all their birth records changed, so all the stuff about his parents could just be made up names, you know? Wait.
Really? Yeah. $2,000 a baby?
Yeah, back then in the 30s.
It's not
and 40s.
A bad deal.
Shit, same cost as a tiger cub.
I can get a 91 Geo Prism for less money than that.
What would you rather have, child or tiger cub?
Neither.
So, Bessie Bernard was actually arrested in October of 1949, and they tried to, like, grab her address book from her purse, and that's when she, like, in the reenactment, she's like, yeah, get out of there, this is mine.
How she's the like, fuck did that second cop not get him? He ran out of the room with the black book, and, like, the second cop chased him, and within a second, the second cop was back and had empty-handed. Like, what kind of fucking cop are you? That old man was, like, on one leg.
Bessie Bernard in the reenactment sounds like Lois Griffin.
Yeah, she does.
She's like, ah, we're making good money. Whatever.
Get the black book, Dad.
It's fine. Just get the book. It's good. It's good money.
That guy ran out of there, like, 3 miles an hour, and a cop was like, wait up.
So her father runs his ass away and apparently throws the book away.
Top
this
speed.
This old man takes off and disposes of the black book.
Hmm.
And they think that this book had the names of all the people she sold babies to.
Big names, I'm sure. Notable.
So she was found guilty, but she paid $2,500 to avoid serving jail.
The price of a baby.
That's a week of work. That's a week's worth of work.
That's one baby, not bad.
That's a baby and a quarter.
Yeah, and a finger.
That's a baby.
That's baby, a baby in a hand.
That's a baby in a head right there.
Oof.
Oh, are we bartering baby parts here?
Yeah, yeah. Come on. What are you talking about? That's a baby in a hand right there.
That sounds like a deal.
That's a baby in a quarter. One really big baby. Whatever you see it, it's not that much. So she got out of jail. Apparently she never did anything like that again, and she died in 1989. And Joe depressingly says he doesn't want to leave this world without finding out how he came into this world, and it's really fucking sad. And so years later, he found some family on Ancestry.com. He found out his mom was dead, but he had a half brother and some cousins. So that's the answer to that depressing ass story.
She had to have been dead. He was old in that segment, which is like early 90s. Ancestry.com is what, 2005, the earliest?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the earliest ones, but still, he found some family, so Joe Soul.
Good for Joe.
Yeah, whatever. What's the next case?
Gary Simmons.
The body?
This is the guy that they found in the cave.
This is the body guy.
Another fucking cave segment.
Lots of caves, lots of truck stops.
Yeah, yeah. Got me for the stereotypical spot here.
Where murders and dead bodies are most likely to happen.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to be talking about... this is an interesting case. It kind of starts off like a Stephen King story, and then it just like goes to like a boring episode of Law & Order.
I like that synopsis.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. On October 16th of 1991... A happy-go-lucky bus driver named Tyrone Rollins. That's weird. I was just singing Black Flag. Tyrone Rollins discovered Gary Simmons' remains in a cave. But that's so boring. Wait. Okay, I'm going to... Fuck that.
I mean, it's interesting in a sense of like a... If you like Goosebumps novels.
Yeah, yeah.
I drove a bus and I saw a cave behind me. And a week later, I just had to go in. And I found a pair of shoes.
Yeah, he also said that he like thought he would like feel people behind him. Like presence.
Yeah,
like
yeah they were calling him into the cave.
In the bus yard.
Loser.
He's cool.
The cool guy.
He goes to the mysterious cave that's, behind the bus lot.
The Cave of Wonder.
And he finds a super dead body, like real old dead body.
Dead was it?
Like the fashion sense.
Fucking dead.
They found this body in 1991. This dude had been missing since 1974.
Oof.
They were pretty quick about finding who this guy was.
His shoes looked brand new.
So they determined that the guy's name was Gary Simmons when he had called the police, and he'd been shot in the head. So police reopened the investigation and discovered that Gary, who had vanished in October of 74, was murdered by Tom Dixon. And this guy, Tom Dixon, during the 70s, Gary had owned and operated a bunch of gas stations in Kansas City, and his main hobby was horse trading.
Loved it.
This dude, Tom Dixon, he kind of like put an idea into Gary's head and just kind of like a little seed of an idea and let it grow into a bush. So on October 14th, the day before he vanished, he learned that Dixon had a purebred horse that he was willing to sell. So the next day, the two of them met at Gary's office about 10 a.m. and they both left together, and Gary told his secretary that he would be right back. But he never came back. But 15 minutes later, this dude, Gary, calls his secretary and tells...
Give me that fucking check.
Yeah, he tells his secretary to write a check for $30,000 and give it to this dude, Dixon. So 11 a.m., Dixon arrives to pick up his check. And then he says he's going to meet Gary because Gary's got to sign it for it to mean anything. Nobody knew if this meeting ever took place or where it took place. And Gary was last seen alive at 11:30 a.m. at a truck stop 10 miles from his office.
Of course, truck stop. And a cave in the same segment.
Dude, there you go.
The twofer.
Apparently people saw Gary looking out his window waiting for somebody. And just before noon, Dixon showed up at Gary's bank. And Gary called the president of the bank claiming that Dixon was coming to cash the check.
It's like that time and place when everybody knew their bank manager.
Right? The neighborhood bank manager.
What's that? Hey, Tom, Fred, how are you? How's the kids? I'd like it to deposit, please.
Yeah, he knew Gary.
And he knew him.
And Gary had called, so it was all cool. So Dixon gets all the cash, and the bank manager suggests that he opens an account. And he's like, nope, I got to pay some debts right now.
Whatever. I got some debts.
So 5 hours later, Dixon gets to a salvage yard. And he wants to smash Gary's car, right?
He wants to burn it? Didn't he ask to burn it?
Yeah. He's like, make it tiny so I can make it small for you. But, you know.
That guy's like classic oil on his face and his elbows. And he's like, the FBI has been hounding my burn lot pretty good.
Yeah. He's like, they're watching the incinerator. So
Yeah.
And his suggestion is to just put a brick on the fucking gas and let it go into the river.
And guess what he did?
That's exactly what he did. And it's just his line reading. He was one of the best performances, that greasy.
Oh, he was great. Yeah.
Mechanic. Yeah.
A-plus.
That was a good line reading.
I wish I could go to a junkyard here in El Paso and get that much help.
Yeah. That's a good suggestion.
Oh, yeah. He got his full attention.
Oh, so what you're going to want to do is
hand on the shoulder. He's always washing something with a dirty rag, too. He's always like, what you want to do is.
So after sending this car into the Missouri River, Tom Dixon gets dropped off by a friend at a truck stop, and he's never seen again.
Wasn't he last seen at a diner by that really nosy cook?
Yeah, waiting for somebody,
the guy was like under the window, like, to serve the fucking breakfast. He was just like,
what's going on? Why is he looking out the window?
Pay attention to the grill.
So 6 months later, on April 25th of 75, Gary's car is pulled out of the Missouri River, and the police still have no idea what happened to either of these guys until Gary's skeletal remains were located by the cool bus driver. So people think that the murder was over this horse deal. The horse probably didn't exist or something.
That's one thing I take away from this case is that I will probably never be killed over a horse deal. Yeah. I could probably safely put that one in the bank.
One less thing to worry about.
That's not on my future.
Killed over some equestrian deal gone awry.
He tried to buy a horse and was killed. That will never be said about my future.
So obviously Tom Dixon is always considered the main suspect, but he's never been found or charged with anything. Apparently a PI was hired by Gary's family, and he stated that Gary disappeared just before he was about to testify in a federal investigation about black market gasoline sales.
Of course.
So they think it has something to do with this, like he was getting gasoline illegally for his gas stations. But one of the investigators says that that theory is kind of bullshit, that what he was talking about was like not like the most – it was a little shady, but it wasn't illegal what he was doing, and a lot of other gas companies were doing it at the time.
I think killing people is illegal.
Yeah, well, not that part. The gasoline cell. Yeah. Oh. I don't think I had to specify that. But
you have to spell that one out?
Yeah, so this is still totally unsolved.
Did anyone else love his 80s school photo? The Aha music video school photo that he had of him? That's the only photo. That's the only one they showed.
The drawn?
It looked drawn, but it was a real photo. It was straight out of that video. And also when they showed Tom Dixon at the end, they were like, here's a photo of Tom Dixon, and this is what he might look like now. And they just raised the contrast. It was the same photo. They just made it lighter.
Yeah, they did just raise the contrast.
It was awful,
we should face-app Tom Dixon, see if anybody could find him.
Here's what he looks like in black and white.
So this has never been solved. Nobody knows what happened to Gary for sure, because Tom Dixon
50 years ago.
Tom Dixon probably successfully got away with 30 grand.
And murder.
And went somewhere totally random and was smart enough about it.
He bought 35 babies from Bessie Bernard.
What the fuck's next?
What is next?
Jackie Dragon. You want to skip that one?
Yeah. Jackie Dragon. There's the update about Jackie Dragon, who's the lady who was looking for her mom. And she found out that she had like three sisters and her mom had given up all these girls, with all from different men, assumingly, because they all look like they're
all different daddies.
They all look completely unrelated. But yeah, we covered this case in full. I'm pretty sure Jackie Dragon lost loves.
And just for those out there, Jackie Dragon looks like a friend of mine. And you don't know that. I can't prove it, and I won't. But it does. But she does.
Didn't we find a picture of her?
And if you're listening, you know who you are.
Didn't we find a picture of her, like a business picture of her, like recently?
Did you guys? You might have during the original airing. You know, when you guys covered the story first.
Oh, yeah. She works for Greenpeace.
A big surprise.
Yeah, dude. She works for Greenpeace. She's on, like, she's like a talking head on news channels in San Francisco.
I have to look her up. She probably has an Instagram.
Probably. I know we posted her, like, her headshot from the Greenpeace website.
Ms. Dragon.
When we originally covered the case.
Was this last season, or was this season four?
I don't know. It probably was earlier this season. It's just taken us a long time to get through this specific season.
This season is very good, though. Four or five are pretty good.
What's next? What do we got?
The final case. Case six.
Oh, the best.
The medical supplies fraud.
Oh, is that really it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
We had, just to recap, Swedish Hitchhikers, Amelia Earhart. Bessie Bernard, Gary Simmons, Jackie Dragon, and now the medical supplies.
Yeah, the Nancy Drew and the case of the missing, of the empty cardboard boxes.
The Bernstein
boxes.
Bears and the empty boxes, yes.
Nothing but wrist, baby.
Yeah.
yeah, what's the name on this case? There's no name, huh?
It's like Fidelity Medical or empty something like that. What was the name boxes. Of that company?
Yeah, it was Fidelity.
Fidelity. Fraud. Fraud Medical.
Fraud Medical, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
What?
Fuck. I just looked up empty boxes in the Unsolved Mysteries, and I found this case that I feel like is the most disturbing thing, but I need to know everything about it.
Oh.
Boy in Box. The terrifying unsolved mystery of the child found in a cardboard box whose identity has never been found. Out 60 years ago this happened. Oh, and there's a picture. Fuck. That's how you can easily fall down a hall. Yeah, this is...
A hall?
A hole.
Fall down a hall?
This kid that was super beat up and bruised was found in a cardboard box in 1957 in Philadelphia. So we're talking about boxes with nothing that heinous in them at all.
No, this is actually... There's nothing in these boxes. Yes, this is completely different. In fact, everyone's still angry, but there's a different reason. That guy got the fucking wool pulled over his eyes. Robert Jones. Dude. What was his name? Robert. The alias. Robert Jones. Okay.
These people put on a fucking show for him.
Look at all these boxes. They're so heavy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at these guys moving from A to B.
Look at our LED wall with a map of the United States.
Dude, the Christmas lights map was my favorite.
Yeah, that was
what the fuck was that? It looked like an artery, like to the heart of. What was it? Where was it based out of? It was like all lines of communication go through Oklahoma.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Or wherever the fuck it was, it was so shitty. I loved it though. I applaud the effort though.
Yeah, so this is a pretty fast little story because it was just. They didn't really have any information.
Wasn't the pitch that they had like distribution centers like all over, yet their map just had like one?
It looked like
one building.
That one point with all these places going outwards, like that's where they were delivering, is what it looked like to me. But
this is the heart of the universe.
Yeah. So Fidelity National Medical Supplies Incorporated was a company based in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Hey, I said Oklahoma. How about that? Good guess.
Fun town.
They placed several advertisements in newspapers across the country looking for investors.
It's a medical state.
They also offered to show these investors their place, you know, their warehouse or whatever. So a guy named Robert Jones, not Robert Jones, he concealed his identity because he was embarrassed that he was such a dupe that got duped. He was a potential investor, and he came to the headquarters in Oklahoma City on January 24th of 1992, so he could see, you know, the business and how it ran.
And he was only through glass.
Yeah, pretty much. He's driven to the company offices.
We can't go in there.
In a limousine provided by the company. Ooh. And when he checks out the operation before he decides if he wants to make an investment.
I've seen enough. Take my money.
He says he checked with the Better Business Bureau in Oklahoma and the National Credit Firm about the company, and neither had received any complaints or evidence that they were not who they say they were.
Hmm.
So they were all working their butts off. You know, they appeared to be super busy. There was phones ringing. There was people packing stuff up in boxes with orders coming in. All these boxes were waiting to be delivered.
Very heavy boxes.
Fake Robert, not Robert, was super impressed, and he immediately invested in the company. He purchased distributorship for $54,000, which was his full life savings.
$54,000,
dude.
Once he saw that Christmas light map, he was fucking in.
He's like, "This is legit. I'm sold."
This place is real.
He was one of more than 300 people who had invested in what totaled $1.2 million. So the IRS immediately becomes suspicious. And February of 92, the FBI, IRS, and Oklahoma City Police made a surprise raid on Fidelity National Medical Supply. And what do they find in the warehouse? All the boxes are empty. No evidence.
They brought Michael Jordan there to check the boxes.
Yeah. In the reenactment, there's these guys opening box after box. Actually, I think that was a real video, right? Was that the actual
video? Yeah, it was real, yeah.
So the FBI, they have to open every box. It's funny, all this stock footage. Well, not stock footage, but all the footage from the raid. They're opening box by box. And, yeah, this one dude starts just, like, chucking them like he's at a free throw competition. It's pretty funny. So there's no evidence that the company ever purchased or received or shipped any medical supplies whatsoever. And the masterminds behind this were long gone. The leader was believed to be a dude named Richard Condina, which was obviously a fake name. And two other key figures are believed to be Harold Frederick Krueger.
Fred Krueger.
And Thomas Alfred Flanagan, and their whereabouts remained unknown until they were captured, thanks to viewers like you, and arrested.
Viewers like us.
Weeks after the story aired, actually.
Oh, just weeks.
Yeah. Well, it says that it originally aired in April and they were arrested in August. So maybe it was after like a rerun aired.
Did Robert Jones get his baby money back?
Probably not.
$55,000? What was it?
$57,000, I think.
$54,000.
That's a lot of babies.
That's a lot of babies, dude.
I know, yeah.
That's like 27 and a half babies.
So Flanagan's arrested in Atlanta thanks to viewer tips, and they're both convicted of mail fraud, wire fraud, and conspiracy. And they were both sentenced to 9 years in prison. They've both been released. And it's
nine and a half years.
They've both been released, and it's now believed that Flanagan and Krueger had made up Condina. So they, like, so the mastermind was fake, and they were just
He was a fall guy, yeah.
You've never met Richard? Yeah. It's like the beginning of Dark Knight, and it's like, who's this Joker?
He's made up.
He's not real, but it's me. Actually, it's nothing like that. I don't know why I said that. Okay.
It has nothing to do with that.
So they did catch these guys, and with the update so creepy, they played that, like,
I even commented to my wife. I said, this is a good fucking song. Like, when it was ending, dude, it was good.
That shit freaks. That, for some reason, that update music fucking freaks me out. I don't
know
why.
It's not like a good update kind of end of music. It's just
it keeps you on your toes. It's like, oh, it's an update, but is it solved? Like, you don't know what's going on.
It's scary. I don't know why that one freaks me out.
It's like, it
kind of also sounds like the like acid level from Mortal Kombat, you know, like it sounds like some
the acid level,
you know, like
the test your might,
but you know, the one where they're like in the sewer and the sewers are like have acid water.
Oh, the Deadpool, yeah.
I don't know exactly what level, but it sounds like a Mortal Kombat game, yeah.
I do know
one of their fucking mugshots is a creep central. They're both creepy in different ways, like. One of them has like a little mustache and creepy like old woman glasses, and the other one's just doing like a pervert smile.
And they got 9.5 years, but like, come on, what do you think they really served in the end? 3?
Yeah, there's no way they served that much.
Not even close. Long. It's got to be 3, maybe 4 tops max.
Yeah, they're a bunch of posers.
I just want to be hired to be one of the people that help them. Not them, but anybody who does like a front company. I just want to hire you to fill empty boxes, tape them closed, pretend you're answering phones. It's like so like it like you're not getting your hands dirty, but it's still cool, you know.
Just have your friends call you during the day so we look busy. Just, you know, be on the phone.
Call me at this number. I'm pretending to be a medical company. Okay.
Just pretend like you have business with me. Yeah. Yeah,
I can tape and shrink wrap empty boxes all day long.
I can pretend I work at Amazon and pack nothing.
Yeah. Sounds pretty easy, actually, just building boxes.
It's great.
It just sucks when you have to put things in those boxes.
Exactly. Which you don't.
Which you don't, yeah. There ain't no medical supplies here. He said all the whole medical supplies in the whole building he could have fit at the edge of his desk. Yeah, dude.
At the edge of his desk, so what was that, like a used Band-Aid and a surgical prep?
Oh, absolutely. Very professional.
This is a wild episode. There was nothing mysterious, but...
I still had fun.
The case of the Swedish girls is pretty interesting.
The photos, like I think Dave said it earlier, about the photos that were found in the dumpster and they developed them. And like just to see them, like what, at the time, 3 days earlier...
Yeah, you know, right before they get killed.
Like, they weren't even found dead yet. You know, they were... It was just, like...
Living it up.
Just from just before. It's like, that's got to be, like, the weirdest shit. And even seeing it tonight, you know, we both had the same reaction where it gives you, like, that feeling that it's fucked up to see that. Yeah. You shouldn't have seen those photos.
Just, like, them just...
They were just alive.
Just at a hotel... Swimming, just being, oh, cool, we're in America, just happy-go-lucky.
If that guy wasn't ankle deep in a dumpster, you know, then we would have never seen those photos.
Yeah. Why was he in the dumpster, I wonder?
He said he was taking garbage out. He, like, worked in the store or the mechanic shop.
He was,
taking my job for me.
He's that's crazy. Do you know anybody that's ever found, like, a body or anything in a trash?
I found the body.
You found a body before?
Swear. No, my second year on the job, I found a torso with no head.
Oh, my God. Are you fucking
in a duffel bag
serious?
In Harlem.
No way.
Wow.
Was it open, or like, did you actually...
Two women found it, and when I approached them, they looked, you know, concerned. One of them was yelling, and a cop was coming over at the same time. And he was like, oh, step back. And he unzipped the bag and he was like, all right, we got a torso here. And I kind of got a glimpse of it. It was February. It was cold. And there was blood like around the bag on the sidewalk. So cops close off the area. We hang around because we're just, you know, we're picking up the route in the area. And later on, a sergeant comes out from behind the dumpster and he's like, all right, we found the head. And he, like, didn't take it out. He just announced it to, you know, his buddies. And then our supervisor was like, all right, everyone back in the truck. Let's get out of here.
Damn. All right. That's enough.
Have you ever seen the movie called Men at Work?
Of course. Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez. I remember years ago I was going on vacation and a friend of mine sent me the video of them throwing the Frisbee, like when they have the garbage lid and they're playing Frisbee with it off the ground.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like your vacation.
They found a dead body in a, what was it, an oil
That's
can?
A great fucking movie, dude.
I've never seen it.
Oh, man.
Really? Oh, it's so good. It's very, very funny. It's the Estevez brothers.
Both of them together?
Emilio and Charlie.
Do they play brothers?
I don't remember if they're related.
I think they're like roommates.
Something, yeah.
Roommates,
not related.
And fellow garbage men.
It is a very, very funny movie.
That's funny.
Let's watch it.
I've never seen it.
Add it to the Stack Pack recommended watch list.
I haven't seen that movie in forever.
Me neither. Now I'm going to go look for it after we
I was obsessed
get off.
With it as a child.
It's probably not good.
Back when I wanted to be.
No, it's very good.
It's still good.
Still good, I promise.
Dan wants to be a garbage man. Dan, you wanted to be a garbage man?
Yeah, when I was in like kindergarten.
You wanted to be a garbage boy?
I did.
You wanted to be a garbage boy in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And I just became one.
I wanted to be a garbage man because I got to play with like a trash compactor and you could just make everything flat.
Exactly. Why couldn't Tom Dixon come to me and ask me to fucking squash his car?
You could have done it in small pieces.
Tiny pieces, yeah. One bite at a time.
One baby arm at a time.
Good timing.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for the delightful torso story as well.
I'm glad you guys asked. You ask, you receive.
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to know.
Yeah. You had questions. I had an answer.
Yeah. So we're the Stack Pack. We're hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for Dan. Thanks to Dan Derwin for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
As always, bro, Dan and myself. Hopefully Eli will join us next time. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth, and perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. Good night, guys. We'll be back. Keep your masks on and stay home or whatever. You know, you've heard it. Whatever.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
You've heard it from all different angles, I'm sure.
Use Purell.
Yeah. Inject it into your bloodstream. Nope.
Do not do that, please.
All right, good night.
Thanks, guys.